Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we are seeing the records fall by the wayside day by day, and this will go into the history books as a record-breaking stretch that's not just a day or two, but maybe almost a week.
Of 100-degree plus?
Yep. Of 100-degree
plus. We're definitely 100-degree plus today and tomorrow with the excessive heat warning. They're saying we might be up around 107, 108 today and tomorrow.
Mm. Dylan Smith with me in studio. At some point, Dylan, do you think people are just going to say, I don't want to have anything to do with Arizona?
You know, maybe. I was just talking about this with somebody earlier today. And in fact, I will take the heat over the environmental problems that you see elsewhere. We don't have hurricanes.
No.
Right? We might get some rain.
We
from
get
a hurricane.
Remnants.
Right.
Of,
but we don't have
hurricanes.
Full bore hurricanes like what just happened, you know, in the
yeah.
Southeast. We don't
yeah.
have blizzards. If you live in town, you know, you don't have wildfires. You don't have the kind of things that you see going on in California where,
yeah.
you know, wildfires are you know,
so you're
taking
saying
over communities.
When
I'll
you
take
look
this.
At the big picture, it's kind of a lesser of all these other environmental hazards.
Well, yeah. you know, certainly, especially this resurgence
yeah.
we're seeing in
yeah.
the heat this week after yeah. we thought summer was,
yeah.
you know, slipping away
yeah.
for it to come roaring back like this is very tiring, right?
Only good news for Florida is if you look at the least populated place along the entire mm-hmm. west coast of Florida, it hit that place. I mean, it could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's Buckmaster in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, Friday, September 27th. We are part of the Bustos Media Company. We've got five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030. KVOI, The Voice. We begin in January, our 15th year, with the Buckmaster Show, and that will push my time in town here to the beginning of 37 years in on the Tucson broadcast landscape. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, the live line is 520-790-2040, and that is sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, right now we currently have two of them, but they're very solid two. Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's been a supporter since we launched the program in January of 2011. Thank you, Dylan.
Absolutely.
Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, and that's Dan Shear and his team. All right. Enshrined in the Arizona Constitution, the Arizona Corporation Commission regulates public utilities, securities, facilitates incorporation of businesses and organizations, and monitors railroad and pipeline safety within Arizona. The five-member board is currently controlled by a 4-to-1 Republican majority. Three Democrats and three Republicans are vying for three seats on the November ballot. Republican Leah Marquez Peterson from Tucson is the only incumbent among the six candidates. Leah was elected to the board in 2020. Prior to that, she was appointed to the commission by Governor Doug Ducey in May of 2019, becoming the first Latina to serve in a statewide office in the state of Arizona. She is the only commissioner on that board that is based here in Southern Arizona, but she is not in Southern Arizona right now. She's on the live line up in Phoenix. Hey, Leah, how are you?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Dylan. Good to hear you.
How are things going?
It's going well. You know, I've been campaigning, as you were mentioning, across the state, so really working out of my car these days, but still living in Tucson. So I do get back every couple of days to see my family, but up here this week, just talking to voters and explaining what the commission does and explaining kind of the contrast between the different candidates for this position, these three seats.
There is a record demand for power in Arizona. You've got all of the new chip making facilities coming online up there in the valley. You have AI, you have these incredibly large storage centers that require not only a lot of power, they require a lot of water. Then you've got the car batteries increasingly popular. Where in the world are we going to have enough power to sustain all of that?
Well, that's absolutely what I'm talking to folks about when I'm traveling the state. APS, which is the largest electric utility we regulate in the Phoenix area, has told us they expect 40% increase in energy demand over the next 7 years. And to kind of put that in perspective, it took them 100 years to build where they are now, and now they're going to grow by 40%. So we are seeing incredible demand. You're right, a lot of that's coming from the data center, semiconductor industries, a lot of manufacturers, especially in the Phoenix, Maricopa County area. It's more steady growth in Tucson and some of our rural communities. And we're looking, at my perspective, and the current commission's majority, is an all-of-the-above approach. The priority has to be energy reliability. We cannot grow and have it negatively impact residential ratepayers, so growth must pay for growth, from my perspective. And we need to look at all different types of energy resources to balance the grid. We're seeing a lot of utility-scale solar and battery being opened and launched, and a lot of ribbon cuttings for the different utilities, a lot of natural gas peaker plants, just a lot of activity going on, and we need to utilize that as well as new technologies that are coming along in the near future. So for me, it's a lot of it is balance this growth with energy reliability at the most affordable rates.
Here's Dylan.
Well, speaking of affordable rates, it seems like rates keep going up and up and up, and part of that is down to the role of the Corporation Commission in okaying those rates. Electric companies can't just go and say, hey, we're raising your rates and start charging more. That has to be approved by you folks on the ACC. And why do you keep voting in favor of these increases?
No, that's a good question. And I think what folks need to realize is we have full access to books and records for the 400 utilities that we regulate. When they come before us with a rate application, we're going through that with a fine-tooth comb, and they are applying at that point for investment, capital investment they've already made. So we are approving basically historical capital investments they've made and giving them cost recovery. So the utility is really taking the risk in that regard. You also see right now, nationally, as you guys are aware, incredible increased cost of living, increased cost of goods and services. You know, our business community, I certainly hear it when I'm in Tucson talking to businesses that I used to work with at the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Just the cost of a lot of concrete and lumber and different in the utility space, transformers and solar panel components and things of that nature. So all of that is impacting our utilities also. They come before us with an application. We go through public hearing process. It could take 3 to 4 months, up to 18 months in the case of some of the larger utilities. Folks can weigh in, and we go through that rate application with a scalpel is how I describe it, looking at every program and dollar that they're looking for cost recovery, and we cut quite a bit out of it if it's something we don't agree with. In the recent APS rate case up in Phoenix, we cut more than $200 million out of that rate case before approving the rates for ratepayers across their territory. So it's a very careful decision, but I mean, the cost of groceries and everything else is going up also, so it's a tough challenge we're facing in approving different rate cases.
Well, some of these utilities are publicly traded companies, and their profit margins are known to everyone. Those profit margins, they're not getting any tighter. These folks are making a lot of money, and they're making more and more money.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are publicly traded, so you can also see all of their information. I think in time of like this, where we're seeing increased inflation and cost of living and so on, it's not realistic to think that prices would stay the same if everything else around you is going up. So we are trying to do our very best that when, like as an example, we regulate some 350 water utilities. A lot of those are small. A lot of them haven't come before us in many, many years and have not made the proper to capital investment needed to ensure that water service is reliable. So when they come in years later and need this investment, it's costing more than it would have 10, 20 years ago if they'd come before us, and that hits ratepayers. So we are doing all we can to make sure it's gradual in terms of an impact. We're approving things like no disconnections for summer shutoffs right now because we want to make sure people are safe and they have electricity and they're not choosing between paying for food items, whatever it may be, if their budget is very tight. We're also approving and promoting budget billing, so you can spread your electricity bill over all 12 months. You're not seeing increased rates during the summer. We're trying to do all we can to make sure that residential ratepayers have reliable energy and at the most affordable rates that we can do in this environment.
Should we open up the generation market, kind of like Nevada did? They went from about 10% energy independence to over 50% in less than a decade. Texas also decided to go to open the market up, more of a retail kind of environment for utilities. Should we go that way in Arizona or keep it the way we've got it?
It's an interesting question, Bill. When I came on to the commission in 2019, 2020, we were in the midst of that debate. So should there be retail competition like Texas? It's a complex question because there, I think in the Texas case, weren't a lot of consumer protections put in place. So you would have utility retail companies coming up to you, offering you a toaster to switch to them, or you'll get a microwave if you switch to this one, and just different gimmicks. And you had a lot of fraud going on. So as we studied retail competition, I wrote a letter to the docket, which is how we operate. It's like an online legal folder that the public and all the commissioners can see. And I identified some 15 to 20 questions I had and concerns and said, I'm coming into this open-minded. However, I want all these different issues addressed, and I want to really study this before we make any such drastic decision as deregulating our energy markets. Here we are now. We haven't addressed it again since that time in 2020. We did see Texas go through Hurricane Uri, where they had a lack of winterization on their pipelines and some of the complications of deregulation and what happened there, massive power outages, and actually people died during that hurricane situation. So we just want to make sure if we're going that direction someday in the future, we've really done our homework. We understand the consequences and unintended consequences of deregulation.
You know, Dylan brought up prices, and that's what ultimately the consumer cares the most about, what they're paying for their energy. Wallet Hub, and I don't know if that's the most reliable source on this, but they recently ranked and recognized Arizona as having the second most affordable energy rates in the nation. Do you think that's accurate?
I do. I mean, I use that statistic quite a bit as I'm talking to folks, because if you've lived in Arizona your whole life, like I have most of the time, a little short stint in California, it's hard to compare, right? Is this a fair rate? What should I be paying? Is it affordable? So to see a national survey like that through that Wallet Hub survey, they've got a great graphic. It shows every state and the average dollar amount that those ratepayers are paying for electricity and natural gas and gasoline. And very proud that Arizona is the second lowest energy cost in the nation. New Mexico is actually the very lowest. As you can imagine, California is one of the highest. But they did a very thorough explanation and analysis in that study. And so it is one that I carry around with me to talk to people about.
You know, the grid took a lot of, I'm sure it was a tough summer. And it's the summer that is still going on with these kind of record-breaking temperatures. How did the grid in Arizona hold up, and did we have to import any energy into the state?
Good question. I mean, we've also been recognized in Arizona as having one of the most reliable energy grids. Now, certainly, especially in Tucson, when monsoon season hits, we do see weather impact, take out poles, going down Grant Road or something of that nature. And so we have summer preparedness meetings with TEP and APS and the other utilities to make sure that they've got backstock on some of the supplies they'll need to get us back online as quickly as possible. But power outages or rolling brownouts like California has had because we aren't prepared with energy resources, no, that's not happening. I'm grateful and proud of the work that we've done with our electric utilities to ensure that they have the energy resources they need. How, as a listener, how can they make sure that they are feel comfortable about that energy reliability? They can read the Integrated Resource Plan, the IRP, that's on TEP.com or APS.com, depending where they live in the state, and read what kind of projections TEP is making on population growth or commercial need, what kind of energy resources will they be bringing online? How much are they projecting? And so on. So we're really on top of the utilities, making sure that ultimately they're providing the very best job in energy reliability, because we also know when it's 114, like it is here in Phoenix today, it's a life and death situation if you don't have electricity. This mm-hmm. could really impact, you know, your ability to cool down, and we don't want to see those kind of stories occur or those kind of issues impact ratepayers.
All right, Leah Marquez-Peterson with us on the Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dylan Smith is here, the co-founder and editor of TucsonSentinel.com. We'll take a break right here. We'll be back with Leah Marquez-Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner incumbent, coming up after back with us right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Each Friday, we bring in a newsmaker, and today it is the Arizona Corporation Commissioner who represents Southern Arizona, Leah Marquez-Peterson. And Dylan Smith is here, co-founder and the editor of the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Leah Marquez-Peterson with us on our Live Line. She's up in Phoenix, the Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios here on KVOI at the Arizona Corporation Commission regular open meeting In early September, the commission voted unanimously to approve a certificate of environmental compatibility, a CEC for TEP's Midtown Reliability Project. There's been a lot of concern over this project about putting these giant poles kind of going through the Midtown. Did this clear the way for that?
So what's interesting, Bill, and I think I was on your show previously talking about this project. It's been going for some time. We have a line siting committee that runs a process, and they did a great job in this regard of bringing all the stakeholders together, concerned folks from the Sam Hughes neighborhood, from the Uvalde area, Banner, I mean, all along the area. Anyone who wanted to weigh in could participate in the public hearings, and they heard from hundreds of people and received a lot of testimony. Ultimately, they put forth various paths and chose the one that came before us. The line siting committee voted 9-0, so they all supported this particular path. So when it came before us, we knew that they had negotiated and worked with the mayor and council. They had talked with the utility and all the various stakeholders in the neighborhood, and so we voted in support unanimously of the unanimous decision by the line siting committee. So, it was something I was very happy it worked out that way. Being from Tucson and living there, I certainly heard from a lot of folks about their concern, but everybody realized we needed this additional transmission in order to bring the clean energy that so many folks want to see grow in the TEP footprint. They needed additional capacity, so that transmission was needed.
And it would have been putting this underground would have cost TEP $67 million, and they were not willing to go to that point. Was there also a safety concern about going underground?
I think that the issue was primarily around the cost, because $60-some million, so it's 6 to 10 times more to underground the line. The big debate was, should some of it be undergrounded? What portion of it should be? If it is and that dollar amount comes forward, who should be responsible? Is it taxpayers? Is it ratepayers? Is it shareholders? The university? Where will these funds come from? And ultimately, what has been decided, it's above ground, but there is a little window to work something out with mayor and council, potentially, if they're able to negotiate something that might work for historical areas within that Midtown Reliability Project. So there's a lot of detail. Folks can read the transcripts online. So it's a very transparent process if they miss somehow all the public hearings and activity going on in the Tucson area. But it seems like it's something that we've been able to compromise on and come up with something that will meet that clean energy demand, the transmission that's needed, and also make sure that the community that's surrounding that build-out is happy with what the outcome will be.
All right, let's bring in Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com.
So you just brought up a couple of times clean energy, renewable energy. Why did you join in the Republican majority on the Corporation Commission to vote to repeal Arizona's renewable energy standards earlier this year?
Good question. So that renewable energy standard was set in 2006. So if you think back to 2006, that was a time when solar energy was really getting started, and it was heavily subsidized by the commission at that time, creating a standard that said that 15% of retail sales will be renewable energy. That meant that over time, 2006 to 2024, there was close to $3 billion in subsidies paid by the utilities, by ratepayers, in order to build up that solar industry. Now, thankfully, solar is very plentiful. We have a lot of utility-scale projects coming on. There are a lot of ribbon cuttings I'm attending with solar and battery. You see a lot of residential solar. That industry no longer needs to be subsidized. It can stand on its own 2 feet, and we can see it participate in all-source requests for proposals or all-source RFPs that the utilities are engaged in. In fact, APS in the Phoenix area was just telling me they put an all-source RFP out for 1,000 megawatts, which is a lot. 700 megawatts of that came back as solar. And that's solar competing on an even playing field with natural gas or whatever other types of projects came forward in that project. So we no longer need that renewable energy standard in place. It does not mean that myself or fellow commissioners are anti-solar or anything like that. It means that times have changed. 20 years have passed, and that no longer, none of these energy sources should be subsidized. They should be standing on their own 2 feet, and the filter they should be looked at is that it's going to provide energy reliability, because we've talked about in the last segment how important that is, at the most affordable cost for ratepayers. So we are still seeing renewable energy grow, and TEP in and of itself has a very aggressive goal at growing their renewable energy on their portfolio because it makes sense for their diverse energy portfolio.
Is there any capacity that we can tap into that we are not tapping into currently at the Palo Verde nuclear power plant?
Oh, good question. I have asked much of the same, those questions to the utilities. I believe there's 7 utility partners on the Palo Verde nuclear power plant that have ownership. APS is the managing partner. Within the last 2 years, you saw, I believe it was New Mexico, PNM, their utility, sell a portion of their shares, and Salt River Project, an Arizona utility, was able to acquire that. So there's been a little bit of movement there. There are 2 additional pads out at Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant where someday we could have additional units built because it is clean energy, and I think a lot of the state would support that, but it doesn't make financial sense at this time. If you look nationally in Georgia, they just built 2 units called Vogtle, and it was way over budget, took a lot of time. I think one of the utilities actually had financial challenges because of it. So we don't want to go that direction, and that's why what you've seen a lot of focus be on are small modular nuclear reactors and micro reactors. There's a lot of excitement in the industry and among the commissioners on what SMRs could bring to our energy portfolios. I actually co-chair a nuclear task force on advanced nuclear technologies, which are SMRs. They're probably 10 to 15 years out because, again, they're experimental at this point, and they're being tested, and they're very costly. So we need costs to come down for them to make sense for the utilities to engage.
These are like little mobile nuclear reactors on like a semi-tractor trailer bed?
The micro reactors are, yes. So if you can imagine a hurricane taking out a grid or a portion of the grid and being able to roll in a micro reactor someday that's on the flatbed truck, plug into the grid to bring them whole again. The small modular nuclear reactors are just smaller footprints. So they're still on 10 acres at state instead of 100 acres. So they can be placed more nimbly throughout the communities or the region.
The storage, I mentioned this at the beginning about the storage, computer storage centers and AI. Yeah. They use a lot of water and power, don't they?
They do. And we've been identified in some national media as being like one of the top 5 states that the data centers are looking to grow. It's a challenge, though, Bill, because if you imagine a data center coming to the state, we have, I think, 60 or 70 of them already in the state, but so many more wanting to come because of our use of using the cloud and ChatGPT and AI and all these different functions. We need more data center space. So I fully understand that. But it's a big box coming to the desert that uses a lot of energy, uses a lot of water, and needs to be in our most populated areas. I've had lots of conversations with the data center companies to say, how can we be innovative about this approach? Can it be structured a different way? Can you run entirely on reclaimed water? Can you have energy behind the meter, meaning they generate some type of energy that serves us during peak times, 3 to 7 when we need it? Do they need to be in the center of Phoenix because it's the most populated area we have? Or could they be where our coal plant will eventually close in, 2031, 2032? I'm poking at them quite a bit in terms of how it's structured. But right now it's the traditional way in which they come into a community and build their kind of big box locations that don't provide a lot of jobs. So there's a lot of debate and conversation going on about how this data center growth, which is absolutely needed in the United States because we're so dependent on our smartphones and all of that technology, how we build that out, and it's a national question we need to figure out.
Dylan, just go ahead. Very quickly on that, why aren't these data centers required to have roofs that are basically all just covered with solar panels, right?
Right, and some of them have gone that direction. It's just not enough because solar is intermittent. They need to be plugged into the grid, and they require so much energy. It's a huge demand from our utilities. So if you look at the IRPs or integrated resource plans for APS, because that's in Phoenix and that's getting most of the requests, they're projecting how many data centers or how much energy demand they can handle over the next 5-10 years, and then who else will remain in the queue. We've got a long queue of data centers that want to come to the state, so I think we're still figuring this out.
And on that note, why aren't we doing more in Arizona to kind of encourage distributed solar, you know, especially, you know, small businesses and homeowners who have, you know, installations? It seems to be becoming more onerous to, you know, install your own solar. You're not getting back as much money when you provide power to the grid as you used to.
Yeah,
and that's down to
it's
the decisions you make at the Corporation Commission.
It is, yes. And it's a more complex question. So if we kind of break that apart, one, we've talked about not subsidizing solar to the length it was in the past. So it's got to make financial sense for your small business or your home, right, to put this on your home. We've had some challenges with solar installation companies and kind of customer responsibility. So there's some efforts happening now to accreditate solar installation companies or to have preferred vendor lists so that people aren't getting scammed. So that's a whole other challenge we're facing. And we don't regulate them, right? Those are free market businesses. But how do we handle that when they're responsible for installing a lot of the residential solar? And then on the flip side, if you look from a state perspective, a larger perspective, the most efficient way to grow solar is utility scale solar in the state. So that is the most cost efficient and just the most efficient for putting renewable energy onto the grid. So we're dealing with all these different complex issues while making sure that we don't impact in any way the ability for someone to have residential solar and that the utilities have their robust programs that are going on related to that, but also realizing that to put more renewable energy on the grid faster, it's utility scale solar and battery.
Gasoline is brought into this state through the pipelines, and you guys regulate that. If we have a problem with a pipeline coming in, it used to come in from El Paso, that area. I don't know if it still does, but we have a problem there. We've got a big problem then with no gas coming into the state.
Yeah, we actually regulate the natural gas pipelines, which are run by Kinder Morgan and others, not the gasoline pipelines.
Okay.
But those are also operated by Kinder Morgan, and I'm a former gas station owner in a previous life. So I'm familiar with that. And yes, they are still coming from Texas. Any interruption in our pipelines, whether natural gas or gasoline, is very detrimental to Arizona. We are at full capacity on kind of both of those, meaning that pipeline's full up with orders and demand, whether it's natural gas or gasoline. So we've got to tackle eventually pipeline expansion to make sure that we're protected in Arizona. Natural gas prices have fluctuated greatly, as we were aware. You know, during the Hurricane Uri, when supply was cut off, natural gas prices spiked, and we had so many different issues. But now they're way low again, and so they're able to compete with solar. But it is something that fluctuates greatly, and we need to be able to either store natural gas in our state, like we do store gasoline. We have those large gasoline tanks that serve our gas station retailers, and figure out how we're not so susceptible to market swings when it comes to natural gas.
Okay, final thoughts, Dylan, before we let Leah Marquez-Peterson go.
Well, there is a question that I've been asking every politician in this election year, and it is, will you accept the results of this election?
Yes, I'll accept the results. I think, though, because I've been asked this by many different journalists, we have still a lot of improvements that can be made. I'm campaigning now in all 15 counties, and so I've heard county recorders and different folks speak. There have been some issues and some errors in various counties, and I'm hoping that this upcoming election cycle, we've got those figured out. I have heard throughout the entire state folks talking about the fact that early ballots arrive October 9th and that we need to get those filled out, the whole ballot. Don't skip the ballot propositions. Fill out the entire ballot and vote for everyone on that, and then turn that in soon and don't sit on it until November 5th. So I would love to encourage listeners to please complete the entire ballot, do your homework, and turn that in. But sure, I'm going to be accepting the election results.
Okay. Leah Marquez-Peterson, incumbent Republican on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Leah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Dylan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
See you.
take a break right here. I'm going to talk with Dylan in segment three right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sahurita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sahurita Sun, covering your hometown.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. Our thanks to Leah Marquez-Peterson for our Friday Focus interview today. And so much going on. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. So much going on when it comes to power. I mean, we just, all these data centers or data centers, the AI requires a ton of power. You got the electric car batteries. You've got
you still got people pushing crypto, which requires
the
just
chip
a,
makers,
an insane amount of power.
It's just all this stuff happening, and then going back to the way we started today's show, at some and then we've got the record-breaking heat continuing and kind of the new normal. And you wonder at some point, will people say, I just going to look the other way and go somewhere else? But you brought up a good point. If they say, well, I'm going to go someplace else, is that someplace else have more environmental problems than Arizona has?
Well, it's a very long-term trend. But we've seen the effects of climate change in the Midwest, where winters are definitely not as severe as when you and I were kids.
Minnesota didn't have their annual winter festival last year. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any snow.
It's very, very different than, even just 30 years ago in the middle of the winter in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, when we were growing up, walking to school and the blizzards. And
uphill both ways when it was below zero with bare feet.
Yeah. Our friend, your colleague, Paul Ingram, Paul's busy today. He's down on the border. But before we talk about what he's doing down there, he's continuing to follow, as are you, the Senator Wadsack criminal speeding case, which you guys broke over at Tucson Sentinel. Is there something new on that? Is she claiming that the officer that pulled her over didn't actually clock her on radar going 71?
Well, that seems to be what her lawyer is maintaining. They say that the department told them that they don't have a record to give them of what the radar was. The latest development in the case is that the trial that was scheduled for next month has been pushed back. There's not a specific date for it right now. There was a pretrial conference and the trial itself scheduled for the same day. The Tucson City Court judge who was assigned the case, she recused herself, so it was assigned to somebody else. Now there's a new pretrial conference set, but not an actual trial date set the last time we looked at the docket, which was early this morning. So we will see how this plays out, but Wadsack is continuing to claim that this is all about political persecution and really
getting her, Team Wadsack, getting her electric vehicle home.
Yeah. Team Wadsack seems to be saying that
she
was targeted to be pulled over because of who she was. And it seems pretty clear from the body cam video and the police report that the officer who pulled her over really had no idea who she was, other than, you know, according to him, he pulled somebody over for speeding and then found out who she was. But in the report, the officer called her a U.S. senator.
Oh,
and you know, she's not a U.S. senator.
No.
So, you know, it's
so clearly he had no idea who she was from that. I mean, U.S. senator. Anyway, what penalty could be meted out in a case like this?
I think all told, all the fines come to $1,000 if she were to just, up and, plead guilty and pay the fine. There might be a couple points on her license, but probably not enough to affect insurance. That is another one of the questions about this. It wasn't just the criminal speeding ticket, but also a ticket for not having proof of insurance. And
oh, really?
Here we are months later, and she still has not provided any proof that she actually had car insurance on that day. Generally, when you get a no proof of insurance ticket, I don't know if you've gotten any. I've gotten a couple. You know, if you don't actually have the card on you when you get pulled over, you get a ticket.
Yeah.
And then you just go down to city court and show them, yes, I had insurance on such and such date, and they automatically drop it.
I try to keep a copy in my car and in my wallet.
Yeah, I sometimes forget. Or it's out of date. Or
Your colleague, Paul Ingram, who is really a nice addition to our Friday program here. Paul joined us a week or so ago. But you sent him down to the border, to Douglas, where Kamala Harris is appearing. And this is one of those, probably your first visit, certainly to the Arizona border, right?
I believe it's her first visit to the Arizona border and her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border in quite a while, I think.
Is she giving some kind of a policy speech?
We are told by the Harris campaign that this afternoon she will be, making some major policy announcements down there in Douglas. And Paul and another one of our reporters, Natalie Robbins, are down there to cover that, check out the scene, see exactly what Harris has to say. And, if there are any new policy proposals that she's laying out, or if this is just, your run-of-the-mill campaign stunt, it's, pretty much par for the course for every politician to go to the border somewhere and,
photo opportunity.
Get lots of video and photos to use in campaign commercials.
Yeah.
There may be a little bit more substance to this visit. We shall see.
4-page ballot here, Dylan, that will be soon on people's kitchen tables.
There are, the usual number of races, which are, quite a few, from the very top of the ticket down to local school boards and, all of that. A ton of ballot measures of both initiatives and referenda that were sent to voters by the state legislature. You've got, some school districts are trying to go for budget overrides and other issues. So, there are a lot of bubbles to fill in. And for folks who are not yet signed up on the early voting list, if you want to get on that, you can do that online at servicearizona.com and have a ballot sent to you so you can have it at your kitchen table and, take your time in filling it out, and you don't have to, show up and feel kind of pressured at the voting booth with a line of people waiting for you to get done with your ballot.
Some people may not have the patience or have really been following the news on the propositions or initiatives, and they don't know about the judges. So you could see somebody kind of maybe leaving a bunch of stuff blank.
And, I didn't mention there is a pretty high profile campaign to not retain a couple of those Arizona Supreme Court justices mm-hmm. who upheld the Civil War era abortion ban.
Yes.
And, it's very, very rare for voters to decide to not retain a judge. They don't mm-hmm. really run for election, but they do have to go before voters every few years to mm-hmm. to keep their seats mm-hmm. on the bench mm-hmm. and to get stamped mm-hmm. with approval. And so there's a campaign to oust a couple of those justices, the abortion measure, the abortion rights measure, which would make it a constitutional right in Arizona, is on the ballot. There's the kind of SB 1070 redo measure. I think it's Prop 314.
Yeah, the border measure. Something about tips.
Yeah, there's that. There's a proposal to completely upend how Arizona runs our primary elections to
do
what they call
the jungle primary.
The quote unquote jungle primary, where instead of having primaries by party, you just toss everybody into the same hat and the top couple of folks go on to compete against each other in a general election. And there are some high-profile folks who are in favor of this. It basically replicate what is going on in California. But in a lot of places, you end up with two people from the very same party running against each other in the general election. And, not a whole lot of choice for voters in some places.
All right, Dylan, what about TucsonSentinel.com?
Well, we are growing slowly, steadily. We've got some big news coming that I can't talk to you about quite yet. But
under the category of,
generally, just us growing as a local nonprofit newsroom. There's some exciting stuff coming up, and of course, we will be very soon reaching our year-end fundraising push, where we have, matching grants where people who support us, your money can be doubled, sometimes mm-hmm. even tripled or more.
So in other words, coming maybe some on the horizon, some a brighter picture, let's put it that way.
No, I mean, things have been very bright for us the past couple of years, actually.
But could actually enhance what you're doing.
Absolutely.
There you go. All right, Dylan. Actually, you're going to be anchoring for me in 2 weeks from today, and you always do a great job.
I better put that in my calendar.
Yeah, I think good thing I brought it up to you. All right, Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch doing the Swan Song. Dan's going to be moving on, and we're going to be doing our Weekend Watch with our sister station, 101.7 The Drive, still presented by Silver City, but Dan's next, right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive, and boy, does it look good over in Silver City. They're in the mid-80s by this weekend, and upper 50s, and after what we're going through, it is certainly worth a three-hour drive over to Silver City. Check out the Gila National Wilderness. I mean, land of enchantment in early autumn. Great place to be. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. And the longtime Weekend Watch contributor, Dan Gibson, is with us on our live line. And Dan, this is actually, we're going to be saying goodbye to you with this particular Weekend Watch. You're going to be moving on to Oregon and working with the wine industry over there. Yeah, as Dylan just said, say it ain't so, but we are...
I gave it my best, I know.
We're happy for you, and you've got, what, about 200 wineries to kind of keep...
Yeah, 210 within the 210? Greater McMinnville area. Great food, great. It's a beautiful place. I'm excited for a new challenge, but I definitely will. I'm super thankful for all that Tucson has given me in this area for most of my life, really. So it's a weird time, but definitely thankful for you and for the show and just the opportunity to be a part of something here in Tucson for sure.
All right, give us a couple of quickies for the weekend.
Well, it's Pride Festival weekend, so there's plenty going on. Tonight, around the Armory Park area, 4 to 8 p.m., is the annual Pride Parade. It is also the AIDS Walk at the same time. I think they've sort of merged those things together. There is an after party, the Pride Pageant, at Hotel Congress at 8 p.m. Tomorrow, the Pride Festival at Reed Park, that is noon to 10 p.m., including a Lady Gaga tribute act as the headliner. So can't miss that. But then also a Club Pride official after party at Hotel Congress at 9 p.m. Now, that being said, so there are the official Pride activities. What I think is kind of interesting is that this year there's been a whole bunch of other sort of like less official Pride activities, which I think sort of creates a little bit more of an environment around things. Sunday at the downtown Clifton on Stone, bartenders and baddies. It's a brunch that's $10, doors at 10 a.m. The baddies begin at 11, including Isis Defrost and Christy K, which
decay.
I love a drag queen pun name. I really do. Food is not included, but it should be a really good time all around. Also Sunday, you have your choice of drag brunches, 80s and 90s drag brunch at Chela's. That's at 256 East Congress. That's a celebration of the music of the 80s and 90s with Jan A. Divas. That's $20. So you got to think this thing through. But after that, 4 p.m. at Bumstead's at 1003 North Stone, Pride Queerioki.
Oh, oh, my goodness.
For everybody.
All right, Dan, all the very best to you. Thank you, sir.
Bon voyage.
Thank you.
Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Have a great weekend, everybody.